Hey everybody, we're back here on the Fighter's Block. My name is Joe Gilpin, joined as always by Jesse Rivas. Jesse, you're in the middle of something. You're talking to me about WBC.
Yeah, the WBC has just changed things up. They've stirred things up. It's still quarantine. Boxing's coming back in full force come August, with the first big fight being, it's going to be Povetkin versus Dillian White in one of the pretty anticipated fights for both people up in the UK, but it's the beginning of serious fights. We've had a kind of a soft opening, a phase two opening to boxing where it's been you're a star and you whoop some unsuspecting guard.
Star, quote unquote. Yeah, no, boxing.
And it's still quote unquote. You're still like a B-level or a C-level boxer who's fighting against, you know, like a jobber.
A nobody, yeah, a jobber. Yeah,
Brooklyn Brawler. WBC superstars. Yeah. But the WBC is coming in full force to try to put titles on everyone at lightweight, pretty much. So this is what the WBC lightweight title looks like. So Lomachenko, already huge star. They started this precedent with Floyd Mayweather, where if you're a big enough star, then you don't have to defend it against their mandatory. They make you the franchise champion.
They'll fuck with it. I mean, it's dirty pool. It's they're playing tricks.
And I can dig that. I think that I understand that. So they made Devin Haney the regular champion. So he's the champion who has to have those mandatory defenses. He's not a big enough star. And I can understand that. Can you?
Sure.
Okay.
I think they should all have to fight their mandatories. There's a reason we have mandatories. You know, like it's not mandatory with an asterisk in case you become a bigger star. If that's the case, get rid of the concept altogether. You know what I mean?
But they've made another belt that's also a world champion at lightweight for the WBC. It is called the Diamond title. And they're giving this title to the winner of Javier Fortuna versus Jorge Linares.
I mean, those are good guys, but like, one, I hate the name. Two, I hate the idea. I didn't like when we did a BMF title, which I'm sure we're going to talk about in this episode. There's one belt that really fucking matters. You know, it's nice to have interim championships and be able to get belts on guys for the purpose of, like, getting them a little money. But, you know, it's just this naked ploy for them to, like, fuck over the guys by not giving them the big fight. You know what I mean? I'm supposed to feel like they're doing these guys a favor, but I know they're fucking them over. It's not a platinum?
It's a diamond belt.
Diamond belt? It's not a diamond belt. It's a diamond pacifier. It's like, fuck you.
And you know what? They're not done handing out belts.
They As you mentioned three times.
One more title they're handing out.
Great.
So for the bout that's been scheduled, Luke Campbell versus Ryan Garcia, the winner will be named the interim WBC champion.
I swear to God, I thought you were going to say he's the interim diamond champion. Well, what does that, you know, what does that mean? Just make people number one contenders.
You know, you're not wrong about interim diamond belt, because they said that that interim champion gets the first crack at the diamond champion.
I was right. I was right. My dumbass joke was correct, as they usually are. I'm less of a joke teller, more of a truth teller. Yeah, absolutely. Very, very stupid. But what sucks for these guys, they don't get to be world champions, but those are still really hard fights. There's no easy fight in there for
all
anybody.
All those fights are great.
All those fights are great. Fucking Campbell and Garcia, that's a fight a lot of people wanted to see for a while. But the idea that now they're getting for an opportunity to fight for a world championship that neither one of them even wants takes away from the fight a lot more than it adds to the fight.
Fortuna-Linares is a great fight.
Fortuna-Linares is a fantastic fight. Yeah. Why are we putting a dumbass championship on them? There's always been this idea in boxing, I guess they must have some data on it. I'm sure it's from like the 1940s and they've just never updated. That it's like, no, we have to give out a title at the end of the night. If we're not giving out a title belt at the end of the night, then nobody's going to give a shit. I've turned it off by the time they give out most championships that exist. You know what I mean? Like, by the time you're wrapping the strap around the champion, half the time I'm doing something else by then. Or I'm texting people about the fight that just occurred. So I don't really From like a cultural promoter level, I don't get it. For the guys, good for them. I guess they're making a little bit more money.
To me, I think it has something to do with the fact that the WBC has not been able to operate for almost 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. So I guess having these sanctioning fees that they're charging the fighters, like, here's a world title, but we get a percentage off of this.
See, yeah, it's just more ways to fuck around and fuck with them.
So by the end of this whole WBC handing out belts, I think we're going to have, so we have the IBF, we have the WBA, we have the WBC, four titles for the WBC, and then what is it, the WBO? We're going to have seven champions in one of boxing's best weight classes.
Which is like, you may as well have none. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to have seven champions, you don't have, it's like having seven girlfriends. So you really have none. You know what I mean? So you really don't have a girlfriend if you have seven. If you have one, you have a girlfriend. Or like a wife or something. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mesh together. These guys are trying to fuck everybody, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. But as the Teofimo Lopez fight has now been sealed with Lomachenko, speaking of that weight class, it's going to be Mexican Independence Day weekend. So it's going to be September 19th. And we're coming full force. That's probably the biggest fight that's been announced so far.
Where is it going to take place?
I think it's in Vegas.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I think it's a fingers crossed kind of thing. Another fight that's a fingers crossed kind of thing. It seems like Deontay Wilder will not be taking the step aside money against Jesus Tyson Fury.
Christ. That's a horrible move. They're paying you to not get your fucking ass kicked again. You know, and he's not changing up anything. I guess the only thing that's going to change between those two fights is he's going to wear a slightly less heavy black Terminator robe to the ring. Or maybe he'll go heavier. Maybe in his mind, the problem was that it wasn't heavy enough. He's going to come out this time in like a full... Do you remember when Kimbo came out with the big cross?
Kimo.
Kimo. I said Kimbo.
Kimbo the Apollo.
But he's going to do it with a black Jesus on it. As he drags it to the ring.
And it's Kanye West's face.
Yeah, no, it's Kimbo's face. That's who it should be. Black Jesus is Kimbo.
He's Jesus,
yeah, but he's like black Republican Jesus. So he's like Jesus for like six dudes. You know what I mean? Six dudes, and they are also in on the grift. You know what I mean? Kanye West has said he's running for president. Anybody dumb enough to believe that is a fucking, like, how retarded can you be? You know what I mean? Like, you literally have to do things to be on a presidential ballot. That's why you don't see a bunch of people on there as a joke all the time. Like, there's like... people are like, oh my god, if people vote for Kanye West, that's basically a vote for Trump because of X, Y, and Z. Guys, he's gonna fucking launch a new album in a week. He's getting his name out there again. We're about to have another shoe out or something, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like when Hulk Hogan left the NWO to run for president.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He wasn't really on that ballot.
Yeah, people just do dumb shit to get their name out there, to get fucking everybody to fucking do memes and shit about him, and then a week later they're gonna make money off of it. Because people love making themselves dumb.
Yeah.
People love the dumb shit.
Speaking of dumb shit,
why is Wilder gonna fight Fury again? It's just pride at this point. You know what I mean?
I think it's the age thing. He's in the wrong side of 30 now. This is probably his last big fight. But I think he still could have just stepped aside to fight Joshua. Like, to have Joshua Fury fight, and then maybe he gets... I don't see him not being in that conversation.
What if he gets to fight Joshua? That's a way better fight than Fury.
Yeah.
Well, you know, suddenly you can fucking, you know. What if Fury has his Andy Ruiz moment and somebody just comes in there and knocks him the fuck out? It could, you know, he almost had it with that fucking German fella kid.
Oh, yeah, that was a bad fight.
That was a bad fight for him. Shit happens. Take some time. Let the situation develop.
This is what I would have done if I was Wilder's camp. I would have been like, Wilder, we'll take the $20 million. We won't fight. Then we'll sign you to fight Andy Ruiz on Fox. Get you another payday. You beat Andy Ruiz, then we see what happens with the Joshua versus Fury fight, see how that plays out, and then we make even more money.
You have to have like a Brendan Schaub, Joe Rogan moment with him, where yeah. It's just like, hey man, you know he whooped your ass really bad, right? Like, bad enough that this decision might still be from that concussion? Like, chill. Fucking let's take a second and not get your fucking ass whooped again. But that's not going to happen. He's going to go in there and it's going to be real bad.
But while boxing has been gone, MMA has been crushing it.
True.
And we just came off the heels of a phenomenal card.
Phenomenal main event.
Yes.
The rest of the card sucked.
Yeah, Dan Hooker versus Poirier was fantastic. And now you said that main event was great. Well, this card coming up is amazing.
This is like, here's the reason why it's so good. Because... Please.
Go ahead.
No, it's all the international fighters who haven't been able to fight. It's the same way when UFC 251 or whatever it was, the Ferguson Gaethje card. When that popped off, it was like, holy shit, there's like 8 fights on here that I love. That's because all those guys had been sitting without the option of doing a fight. So the UFC had all these different guys they could connect with. For this one, it's all the international guys who haven't been able to travel into the U.S. because we have a retarded person as our president. And so we have all these amazing fights. We're still having to be pretty fluid here because it looks like the card is like in and out of flux as we move closer and closer. For example, we got a new main event today, Jesse.
Huge main event. So it is the BMF champion. It is Ghetto Jesus. It is Game Bread. Jorge Masvidal versus the UFC champion, Usman versus Masvidal. Unification fight. How do you see this playing out?
I think it's interesting that Masvidal would step in right now. Because I guess that means that the UFC came to him with a big money offer.
It had to be.
To placate him in some way. How else does he not look like he's being a bitch in this case? You know what I mean? Unless, conspiracy hat, Gilbert Burns never tested positive for Corona and this was always just a plan. But I don't think that happened. So the UFC capitulates. They do this big money thing, which is really unlike them and really outside of the norm. So I'd like to hear a couple more details on it. But we're talking about all the information we have in the moment. I think it's actually maybe an easier fight in a lot of ways for Kamaru Usman. Because I think in the cage, the threat of the takedown is way bigger against, he's way more likely to take down Jorge Masvidal than he is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt world champion Gilbert Burns.
I was expecting to come here and give my kind of lay out the line of how I think that Gilbert Burns is going to win this fight and he's going to be the champion and he was going to upset Kamaru Usman. I wouldn't have been the only person because the odds were kind of close.
It's reasonable that he would have, if he could do to Usman what he just did to Woodley.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's been very close, but this fight, even though the buzz is higher, the odds are a lot more lopsided, and Kamaru Usman's coming in as a way bigger favorite.
Well, we're talking about 1 week notice. We're talking about Kamaru Usman has never lost a fight in the UFC. He's 11-0, 13-0 if you count the Ultimate Fighter, with wins over half the top 10 already. Jorge Masvidal is 6-4 in his last 10, which is not ideal. He is also on the wrong side of 30. He's actually 50 fights into his MMA career. He's on 1 week notice. There's a lot going on here that is not in Jorge Masvidal's structural benefit. You know what I mean? Have we seen guys with short recoveries come back and do great things and win great fights? It's happened like 100 times during the pandemic. You know, it's still a fight. And Jorge Masvidal is game bred. He is a tough motherfucker. He is durable and sticks around. But for a guy who won a full camp gassed against Nate Diaz, while still whooping his ass, while being way ahead and not having to grapple and get into a lot of things that he's uncomfortable with, I think it's there's just so much in this fight to hate if you're a Jorge guy.
Yeah. If he could come up with a magic knockout or the right game plan and hit him with the right shot, I mean, we've been proven wrong, but just based on the information that we have, it would have to be that level of knockout in order to get this to go forward. They've been beefing. I mean, they're both Florida natives, or at least residents, and they both are, they run into each other pretty often. And Usman's not really a big fan of the fact that even though he is the champion, he is respected by the hardcores. The mainstream media, the biggest stars that they talk about at that weight class is Jorge Masvidal. A Masvidal versus McGregor fight would be a huge business, and that leaves him kind of on the outside. So this is going to be a very interesting fight. How do you market Usman to be a bigger player in terms of pay-per-view draws?
How do you get Usman up there? I think that you have to find a way to promote somebody who's not a knockout artist. So you promote his dominance. He has never lost in the UFC. He's already tied Royce Gracie's win record at welterweight. This guy could go down as the greatest welterweight of all time. By this time in his UFC career, George St. Pierre had lost multiple times. This dude doesn't do that. He doesn't even lose rounds, really. Very, very rarely. I think the Covington fight helped him. I think beating Masvidal can help him, too. he's not afraid to go out there and talk and be fashionable and personable and even have a physical confrontation. Do you remember when Masvidal and Usman started chirping at each other at that like weird press event?
Yeah.
He's not afraid to do shit like that. So I think that Usman is a really marketable guy. How do you market him? Get him, book him a fucking interview on ESPN. Do a highlight reel of all the times of him fucking slamming people on their head and hitting people with big right hands. Show, the footage of him beefing with people outside of the ring. Pushing,
which happens often.
Which happens often enough. Colby, Masvidal, it fucking happens. I don't know what way you can't market this guy. Oh, a young, unstoppable, good-looking champion? How is that guy ever going to get over? It's crazy that we can't do it. But if he's not a fucking knockout artist, we can't, the UFC can't figure it out. So that's how I think. Jorge, is he going to try the big flying knee in the beginning?
I think he is. I think he's going to try to go for broke.
I think so too. I think he's in a situation where he's like, I'm not, if this hits after 10 minutes, I'm losing. You know what I mean?
I think he's going to go all the first round, just go blitzkrieg, do as much as he possibly can. Because I don't see him really doing well in the championship rounds.
Even against, I still think he would have won the Nate Diaz fight, but he's not a guy who like tends to come on really strong in that third round, I would say. Stephen Thompson didn't come on very strong in the third round. Damian Maia didn't come on particularly strong in the third round and got taken down a ton of times by Damian Maia. And if you get taken down a ton of times by Damian Maia, Kamaru Usman can take you down a ton of times. And I think there's so much to hate about this fight if you are Ghetto Jesus. So I'm going to pick Usman. Usman by submission, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's gonna get the finish in some way. Maybe a submission, maybe it's a TKO. But
five
I do think...
Five rounds
is
a long time.
Five rounds is a long time. Man, and Masvidal is going to have to carry a big motherfucking Usman on top of him for so long. You know what I mean? And Masvidal's not a big guy. He fights at 170. He can, he used to make 55 very regularly.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you the last time Kamaru Usman was making 155 pounds. You know what I mean? Literally probably like high school.
Yeah.
So, because I know what he wrestled in college. So, I think that, man, Ghetto Jesus is in trouble. Is this going to be bad for his BMF brand?
Does he give the title up if he loses?
Who gives a shit? I'm just saying in general. You care so much about this like physical belt. I mean this like the quote unquote like the moniker.
All right, let's say Masvidal loses this fight. If he loses this fight, that run is over. Does he have another run after that? He's not the youngest guy.
I mean like a run to the top? No.
Yeah.
No. For sure not. Cause let's look at like who in the rankings has he even beat. He beat Ben Askren, who everybody knew at the time was untested. Relatively, right? He had only fought outside the UFC. He had the one fight against Robbie Lawler, which was super fucking weird. And so maybe that was good, maybe it was bad. He beat Donald Cerrone, joined the club. And then he had the Till knockout, which was actually very good in his one claim to fame. But of the guys in the top 10 right now in this division, he doesn't have the wins. He hasn't beaten Leon Edwards. They were supposed to fight. I would love to see that fight. He hasn't beaten Colby. They're supposed to fight. He hasn't beaten Tyron. He hasn't beaten Stephen Thompson. Lost to him. Lost to Damian Maia. The guys in the top 10 he's fought in there right now, he's lost to. I think that Masvidal might be a little ballooned up in this title shot.
Yeah. I mean, he got here for fame. He didn't necessarily get here because of the record. But we've seen this before where this is Conor McGregor when he was going to fight Aldo the first time. He pretty much got there at the time for fame as opposed to...
Did he, though? He had beaten Poirier. He had beaten Max Holloway.
But all those were up-and-comers at the time. They weren't who they became after.
He beat Chad Mendes.
But that was the first time. That was actually supposed to be
Aldo. That's true. That's a good point.
After he fought Mendes, it was like, well, yeah, you beat the number one contender, so you got this.
See, but there's a difference between going, I agree that he was given it in part because of stardom. At the time, 145 also didn't have a ton of contenders. And he was 6-0 at the time or something. You know, he was undefeated and knocking everyone unconscious. And so it was kind of, it's like Petr Yan. Petr Yan hasn't really beat that many guys in the top 10, but he's beaten the fuck out of everybody in front of him. So we're going to give him a title shot.
And he is fighting this weekend.
So I think there's a little bit of a similarity there.
You want to talk about it?
Let's talk about it.
Jose Aldo, Petr Yan, that's a fantastic fight.
Even though this is not the co-main event, there is another fight in there, a Max Holloway fight that we will talk about. But yeah, Petr Yan is coming off a big head kick win over Uriah Faber. He's beaten Jimmy Rivera, but aside from that, it's a little tough to see where the big names in his registry is right now. So while he's looking good, he's not fighting Aljamain Sterling. He's not fighting Cody Garbrandt, Dominic Cruz. He's not fighting Corey Sandhagen, all these young, so difficult up-and-comers. So it really surprised me when they put together this title fight at all. I was really surprised by that. I thought they might try to get somebody else in there. But Pedders looked fantastic. He's beating the shit out of everybody.
He looks like the number one guy in that weight class.
He does. He passes the eye test.
Yeah.
In so many ways. But a lot of people can pass an eye test against a 40-year-old Uriah Faber. So I'm going to see a lot about what that means eventually. I'm not sure we're going to see it this weekend. Why? He's fighting another guy that's very similar to Uriah Faber. To me, this almost feels like they're trying to get a belt on Peter Yan. And I'm not quite sure why. You know what I mean?
Dana likes him.
Dana must love him because they gave him Uriah Faber to knock out. Because that was clearly what was going to happen. You know, he was feeding him to a 25-year-old Russian knockout artist when he was in his 40s. I had an idea what was going to happen. Now he's fighting Jose Aldo, who is in his mid-30s, has a lot of mileage.
He's not even there yet. I think he just turned 33.
You know that's in the mid of your 30s, right?
But doesn't mid count like 20? Like, that's the early 30s, right?
Why did you say 20? What?
Sorry, is it 35 is mid-30s, right? Isn't like that still early 30s?
I would still say 33 is mid-30s.
Okay.
Whatever. Regardless, he's 33 years old. He's been around fucking forever. He must have won his UFC title when he was like 21. And Jose Aldo, without ever winning a fight in this weight class, is getting a title shot.
The hype up to this was very interesting. So I did see the UFC hype up to this fight, and they kind of built it up as he got robbed against Marlon Moraes. I saw that fight live. I think that was a very close
fight. It was a very close fight. Robbery is not the term for it by any means. There's robberies. Don't get me wrong. But that was just a super, super close fight. And also, you don't give... Okay, he lost a super, super close fight. Or even if he lost a robbery. I've never seen somebody else given a title shot over losing a robbery. It feels like ultimately what they're trying to do is, yeah, they're trying to set up Peter Yan here to get a belt. Because why else put in that guy instead of Marlon Moraes?
I was going to say that because it would make sense that the winner of that fight would get the title shot, not the loser of that fight.
Exactly.
Which was a very close fight. That fight literally could have gone either way.
If you win a close split decision, I'm not mad. If you get a title shot. That happens. Man, if a guy gets a really, really close title shot, you know, really, really close victory over Jose Aldo, that's how Volkanovski earned a fucking title shot. You know, it's happened before.
But I think it's star power. Because the right person that should be on the other side is Aljamain Sterling.
Yes. Now we know that because of the fight a couple of weeks ago. It's so weird that it's star power because it's clearly what it is, right? They were trying to feed Aldo to Cejudo. Now they're going to give Aldo to Pedder. But when he was a champion, the UFC fucking hated Jose Aldo because he didn't have star power. Because this is the... You remember after he lost to Conor, they released the camera footage of his locker room.
Yeah.
Because they were basically like, fuck this guy. They didn't like him. Dana thought he was boring. He thought he stalled out to too many 5-round decisions against guys like Ricardo Lamas and Chan Sung Jung, even though he won the Jung fight by injury stoppage. He criticized him constantly as a champion. And now he's suddenly the big draw. Now that he's a valuable B-side, they can use him as that, like this nostalgic, remember when he was the A-side? I do remember when he was the A-side. You didn't like using him. You put him, UFC 200, I think they put him as like the first fight of the night. Like,
it's a very American thing. It's kind of how Martin Luther King is so revered in this country. But if you go back to when he was alive, he was one of the most hated men.
He was the most hated man in America. He was literally the most hated man in America. And they called all of his protests, or all of his peaceful protests, very violent. That was the thing back then. They said he was lying about his protest being peaceful.
Yeah.
Fun history facts that nobody fucking tunes in for. But what do you think is going to happen in this fight?
Man, if the UFC is selling nostalgia, they have me sold because I would absolutely love nothing more than to see Jose Aldo become a double champ out of nowhere. It's kind of like when Nonito Donaire was fighting against the monster anyway.
Sure.
You know, every great fighter has one last fight in there. Does Peter Yan have enough to be able to extinguish that one last fight that Jose has in him? He looked fantastic against Moraes. He didn't win, but he looked great.
He looked good.
He looked good. that was the big test. Going down to this weight class, we always thought, can he make the weight? Oh, he looks like Skeletor. Oh, he doesn't seem like he'll be able to last all three rounds at this weight class. And then what we ended up seeing was, oh, that's shades of the old Jose Aldo.
Yes, it was shades of the old Jose, I'll say. Yeah. That's another great point. Jose hasn't been at this weight class for very long, and he's definitely going to get depleted. To me, it's almost like a pitch count thing. Like, they're like, listen, we only are going to get, like, 4 Jose Aldo weigh-ins at 135 pounds or whatever. You know what I mean? So let's just get him into title shots as quickly as we can.
Didn't you say we almost got Jose Aldo versus Dominic Cruz?
No, we got him versus in Henry Cejudo.
Oh, okay.
And then Dominic Cruz stepped in.
Oh, that's what that was.
That's what that got was. It. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure. Something like that. He was 100% booked to fight Henry Cejudo at one point for the 135-pound title.
I'll say Jose Aldo in this fight.
In this fight?
Yeah.
I'm still going to take Pettor because it does feel like a setup. But, man, love would be proven wrong. If Jose Aldo... Because to me, what it would be, it would almost be getting back at the UFC for releasing that fucked up footage. You know what I mean? Because I remember that as one of the... I hated that so much. Let's talk about this co-main. Volkanovski Holloway rematch. I went back and watched the first fight. I was a little less impressed with Volkanovski than it was the first time. I remember the first time I said it was like watching Terrence Crawford get Terrence Crawford. There's parts of that that are definitely true, but Volkanovski faded a lot more than I remembered, and that fight was a lot closer than I remembered. I remember at the time thinking that Volkanovski had almost dominated to the point of like, you know, but now looking back, that fight was super close.
I think I had 3-2.
That's watching it back. I rescored it that way. I think in the moment, I think I had it 4-1 Volkanovski, but I might be wrong on that.
One interesting thing that Max Holloway said about that
people fight, can always listen back and find out if I'm lying by listening to the episode we did then.
Like when you said, no one's ever going to beat Holly Holm. She would be undefeated in this weight class for years to come.
Bro, at the time, women's MMA sucked so bad. You know what I mean?
I was on there too, but the conversation we're having at the time was, will she be the next Buster Douglas?
Fair enough. Listen, Buster Douglas was a perfectly fine life. And she would still need to gain over 200 pounds to be the next Buster Douglas. She made weight for her next fight. She's not the next Buster Douglas. Volkanovski, speaking of men who used to be very fat, Alexander Volkanovski, fighting Max Holloway. Max Holloway this week said that he has not really trained for this fight. Did you hear this?
No.
He basically, I think he might have been lying. Alexander Volkanovski said he thought he was lying. He basically said, I haven't seen my trainers or most of my training partners because of the pandemic. Basically up until like Wednesday, he won't see them. That's insane if that's true. If that's true, do not be taking world championship fights. You know what I mean? It's a professionalism issue at a certain level. You would never hear a boxing world champion in any weight class say, yeah, I didn't really have any coaching. I didn't really have any sparring partners. So I did some shadow boxing and running on my own. Time for this world championship rematch to be the number one fighter on earth. Would you ever hear that?
Not by a world champion, but I do know one boxer who would have done that.
Who?
Emmanuel Augustus.
Okay, but you said... So, if you please guys, don't be the Emmanuel Augustus of MMA, Max Holloway.
If you guys don't know who Emmanuel Augustus is, do yourself a huge favor and Google Emmanuel Augustus highlights. He had the potential to be a world champion, an unstoppable force, but his unprofessionalism had gave him 27 losses. Still, Floyd Mayweather says that was the trickiest and hardest fighter he had to decode because he gave him a lot of weird looks. All he ever did was spar. He didn't really take care of his body, and eventually he ended up paying for it.
You know that saying, hard work beats talent when talent refuses to work hard?
Yeah.
Now, what if talent refused to even work easy? You know what I mean? What if talent refused to stop smoking 5 packs a day? You'll see. Emmanuel Augustus.
Yeah. It was unbelievable. Greats. He had that level of talent.
It was unbelievable. Amazing. Well, it's almost shocking. It's almost impressive that you can get that good at something while still being a total fuck up. You know what I mean? Volkanovski.
27 losses.
27 dresses. Volkanovski Holloway. 2. The rematch. How are you seeing this fight? Talk to me about it.
Man, Max Holloway has been arguably the greatest featherweight of all time. He has looked phenomenal. His rise to fame.
Is he, though, losing to Conor?
That is true.
See, Conor's run, it looks so good now. Yeah, you know what I mean? In retrospect, it's so much better. Because even at the time, they were like, we need to get Conor some easy fights. You know what I mean? This is kind of me disagreeing with myself from earlier when I said Conor had a very... They gave Conor a bunch of tough fights. They did, but they didn't do it on purpose. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they were like, we need to give him an easy fight. Here's who we got for him. Max Holloway and this no-nothing Louisiana kid, Dustin Poirier. And he beat the shit out of both of them.
Poirier seemed like he was on his way out. Because he had just been upset a couple times. And, you know, we weren't really sure where he was. Was he going to ever get past the prospect level? Definitely not who he is today.
Well, he seemed at the time, because he was at the time, like any MMA guy where it's like, okay, he does one thing pretty good. And for Max, it was, Dustin, it was hit hard. You know, everybody had like one physical tool. You know, like Mike Swick was really fast. Or, you know, just everybody fucking had
Quick Swick.
Mike Quick Swick, best nickname. Thank God he was fast. But like everybody had like one good physical tool. They knew like three submissions and they knew how to use the cage a little bit. And then they were like a UFC level fighter. You know what I mean? That's still true for a lot of guys.
Yeah.
But it's evolving. And that's what he was. But he kept fucking building. And he kept learning. And he kept evolving. And now his style is totally different.
Yeah.
That's a rematch that I would very much be interested in.
Oh, I would love to see that.
He's earned it. If he hasn't fucking earned it, who's earned it? You know what I mean? The quote-unquote red panty night.
Yeah.
If anybody's earned a red panty night, it's Dustin Poirier.
It's a hard
Dustin style. Poirier's wife, who gets the red panty night? I'm not really certain. Why is red good? Red to me means like, oh, this girl's on her period or something. Yeah, like, I want white panty night.
All I remember is the first time I heard that was in the real Rocky documentary 30 for 30 on ESPN, where the guy who Rocky's based off of, when he gets a shot to fight
Chuck Wepner,
yeah. When he gets a shot of fighting Muhammad Ali, his famous quote is...
the washerwoman, what was Chuck Wepner to Muhammad Ali? Muhammad Ali called Chuck Wepner the washerwoman, I think.
He famously said, honey, get the blue panties.
There you go.
So, maybe I've always thought there was a connection. Between
there's got to be a connection. Yeah. Of course there's a connection. How could there not be? So, Max Holloway. we really took a diversion on that one.
Max Holloway, man, this is another one where I'm not sure. I think Volkanovski's discipline is going to be the difference. Max Holloway has the reach advantage. He's got a lot of skill. He's got a great chin. But I just feel like in this fight, coming into this fight, Volkanovski's more focused. Although Max Holloway is changing his game plan because he was walking through those leg kicks because he said they weren't damaging. He said they were more like taekwondo kicks, where he said the leg kicks that don't make slapping noises are the ones that hurt.
That is true. So a couple of things about that. The low leg kick is very popular right now.
Mm-hmm.
One, we're seeing it finish fights. People are getting hurt by it. I've seen Volkanovski hurt people with that low leg kick. Two, he's definitely right about the thudding effect. But I don't think he's trying necessarily to like put a big damage on his leg. Like if a fight ender happens, it's almost like an accident. You know what I mean? Like, hey, holy cow. But it did affect him in that first fight. I'm surprised to hear Max Holloway say that a little bit, but he's also a guy who will just walk through anything. You know, we've seen Max Holloway in how many warps. We saw Max Holloway having a stroke from cutting weight and being like, no, I'm fine. What are you talking about? I'm totally good. You remember that when he was talking to fucking Bisping?
I really wish I had seen Max Holloway versus Khabib. That would have been dope.
Why? Khabib would kill him.
Well, we know that now, but at the time, like, that would have been like...
Even at the time we knew that. Max Holloway doesn't have good, you know, takedown defense to be able to deal with that. And he's way smaller. So my pick for the rematch, I guess I'll shade towards Volkanovski because he just won the last one. And I love the work that City Kickboxing is doing. But it's difficult to circle that square. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's still difficult to imagine him doing it again, even though he did it the first time. So I wouldn't lay money on this fight, but I'll shade towards Volkanovski.
I think it's a discipline thing, man. It's just...
What discipline?
It's the level... Well, when I saw the hype up, it's the level of shape the Volkanovski's in now. It's It's how serious he's been taking his camp.
Is he in good shape or bad shape? What are you trying to say?
No, I mean, he's in phenomenal shape. He looks in better shape now than he did in the last...
When you say discipline issue, it makes it sound like...
That's an issue?
Whatever you said. Like, it's a discipline thing or whatever. Yeah. To me, it makes it sound like an Adrian Broner situation.
No, you know what I mean? No. Like, to me, cause, I mean, Holloway's a throwback fighter. He's a throwback to when what you did is spar. You're not really doing conditioning. You're most... I mean, you are, but it's mostly about being in there, putting in the time... And sparring, getting your timing right, and getting in shape mostly from fighting than weight training. I feel like that's kind of the vibe I get from his camp. Volkanovski seems like it's a very professionally ran camp, and he's got like all his I's dotted and his T's crossed.
City Kickboxing does a great job. Max is a guy I've definitely, you know, I've talked about on this podcast. I worry about Yes Men with a guy like Max Holloway. Anytime a guy is the only guy from his camp, you worry about the yes man effect.
Yeah.
And we've seen it a lot with Hawaiian fighters. Hawaiian fighters rarely have a guy who disagrees with them in their camp.
Because he's from, over there, he's the King Hawaii right now.
Bro, where does he go where he's not the man on that island? You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I'm going to shade towards Volkanovski on this one. Give me that guy. UFC title rematch. Rose Namajunas is taking on Jessica Andrade. They rematch. They fought once for the title. Since then, Andrade won with a big slam. She was getting her ass kicked, but then she was able to slam her way out of a Kimura. Rose landed on her head, got knocked out. In the next fight, Andrade got knocked out in less than a minute by Weili Zhang, who has gone on to have the fight of the year. They're rematching. It's kind of a where are both people, because they're both coming off of a knockout loss. Because Rose hasn't fought since the title fight. Really interesting where are they right now kind of situation. I think it's
the perfect fight at the perfect time.
I agree. I like this fight right now.
It's a 50-50 fight. I feel like Rose was winning that fight before she got careless and got slammed.
Question. So it's not a secret that Rose is a very emotional person. She's very emotionally raw, in that negative events around her will affect her more, it feels like, than other people. For example, and I'm not even saying that's a bad thing. For example, when the dolly accident happened where Connor threw the dolly into the bus. Rose was on the bus and she got so freaked out. Either they did cancel her fight or they were thinking about it. Like, she did not handle it well at all. And we've seen in different times her basically like be like, I'm too emotionally overwhelmed. I got to get the fuck out of here. A lot of people just had a really tough, and are continuing to have a really tough mental health time with the pandemic and the quarantine and the, you know, George Floyd stuff. Is there any chance that she's coming into this like a little like, you know, not as dialed in as one would hope? Does that make sense?
That's a very good observation. I could definitely see that being the case.
This is kind of like when I suspected that Tyron Woodley might have been fucked up by all the racial protests.
The only thing that...
I have no reason to believe this is true.
The only reason why I feel like that may not be the case in this fight is only because she had a devastating loss that was mostly her fault than it was Andrade doing something well. It was a bit of carelessness on her side. And I feel like that regret, I feel like any other fight that she would have taken, I would agree with you, but not this one.
That's a great point. The close emotional nature of it. She's got to have very little fear around the fight itself. You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's only three rounds. The last one happened, I think, in the middle of the third round, or maybe even early in the fourth. She was absolutely dominating. She was well ahead in all of the exchanging. So really, like, for the anxiety of that fight, like, what would you have? You're going to get outstruck. Didn't happen last time. You're going to get outgrappled. Except for the slam, you were fine. You know, I think that there is a lot to feel good about if you're Rose. I also like that Rose took a lot of time off. I think that makes sense. But man, I still have a hunch that Andrade is going to win again. Even though I think she is the inferior fighter skill-wise and will gas out and all this, give me Jessica Andrade in this one.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I got to go Rose. I think Rose wants this. She wants to reverse that. She wants to prove that it's a fluke. But I'm a little bit concerned about her future after this fight, since she had technically retired at one point. And I don't know how motivated she can get to fight like a Weili Zhang. I think that'd be a tough fight for her.
You looked so annoyed when you had to say it that
way. No, because I was like, Zhang, because like in my head, like I was thinking of the way that you spell it, and then I was like, oh no, that's not the way you pronounce it.
You spell it...
It's Zhang Wei Li.
Okay.
So it's like, it's not even like, if you read it across...
I trust your Southeast Asian woman knowledge a lot more than I trust mine.
So like I read it, it's Wao Li Zhang, but... The Zhang is in the front and it flips and it's Zhang Wei Li. So to say it wrong is kind of difficult because my mind reads it differently.
I'll be honest. The Chinese aren't listening to our podcast. They are, but like in a Secret Service kind of way. They're trying to learn about America through our show. We're highly listened to in the provinces. So, Jesse. You're picking Nama Yunus. I'm picking Andra.
Nama Yunus.
Do you want to talk about the Paige VanZant Amanda Ribas fight? Do you really care?
Don't really care.
Yeah, right. Me either. It's the last fight on Paige VanZant's contract. Do you think she stays at the UFC? I bet no.
I think it.
I bet she goes to Bellator with her husband, where she can get like buku sponsorship money.
She hasn't really been as committed to MMA for a long time.
I agree. Her arm shit. Her arm broke. Blocking that head kick from, like, Felice Herring or whoever. Yeah. And, like, she's had to have, like, fucking 50 surgeries on it. And, like, she did a bunch of times she thought she was going to have to retire because of it.
She's charismatic. She's pretty. She's good enough.
She's good enough.
She's got a great career if she would just kind of walk away.
She's, like, top 25 in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, man, pretty good. Amanda Ribas. They're not going to put... Somebody younger, somebody who's still pretty attractive, you know, Amanda Ribas is not bad looking, certainly. They're not going to put Paige VanZant in a position to win the last fight on her contract without having signed her to a new contract, which would make me believe they have a strong belief that Amanda Ribas is going to win this fight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fight I know you're excited about, Volkan Ozdemir versus this Ryzen dude.
Yeah, Jiří Prozaka.
Prozaka,
yeah. Like, this guy's a beast. I discovered him about 5 years ago. I saw him. He was like an up-and-comer. And
I remember when that happened. He beat Satoshi Ishii, Olympic gold medalist.
Before that, he beat this other Russian fighter. Can't remember his name right now. But he beat this other Russian fighter. And just the way that he carried himself in that fight. And he was so young at the time. I thought that he'd be a force to be reckoned with in about 5 years or so. And we're here. Since that time period, he's actually avenged his loss to Molawal, King Mo.
Yeah, he had, that was it. He was getting built up and it was like, this kid's good, this kid's X, this kid's Y. And then he lost to King Mo and it was like, you know, in a fight that he was kind of set up to win.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be his coming out party. He went back and he beat Mo again?
Yeah, he beat Mo. He became the Ryzen lightweight champion, light heavyweight champion. And now he's making his debut in the UFC against... I mean, you don't like this fight, but I kind of like this fight. I think it's a pretty good fight for him to have against Volkan Ozdemir.
So I think Volkan is a really tough guy to look good against. Even if you're really good, it's tough to show out. So I don't like it as a debut fight. I like it in three fights from now for him.
I think that shows what the UFC thinks of him to put him up so high.
But he's a young, talented... We talk about how the UFC just knows how to push knockout artists. Here's a fucking knockout artist they can't even push the right way. You have 75 light heavyweights who love getting knocked out. You're bringing in somebody with some heat, with some juice. All he does is knock motherfuckers out. You're giving him one of the hardest guys in the division. You're giving him a guy who took Dominic Reyes to a split decision that most people, me included, thought Volkan won. And he made Dominic look mad shitty. And you finally have this guy, he knocked out CB Dalloway. He knocked out fucking Fabio Maldonado. He's knocked out all the guys outside of the UFC that are good at 205. Brandon Halsey, who I have a lot of belief in, actually. People will not know how good Brandon Halsey is, but he's really good. You have it set up so easily. And they came and fucking gave me the slam dunk of watching, say the name again, Pravashka?
Prozaka.
Jiří. Yeah. Of watching Jiří knock some motherfucker out. Vulcan's tough. Vulcan's a tough motherfucker. Did you see what he did against Ilir Latifi?
Yeah.
Beat the fuck out of Ilir Latifi. And then in his last fight, he made the guy look super shitty. So I don't like it as a fight for that reason. Without seeing Jiří against a lot of other UFC talent, I guess, you know, I would pick him But, man, I don't know. Ozdemir can really win this fight. In fact, I'm going to pick Ozdemir. Why not? I'm gonna flip a coin.
You know, they did a very similar thing when they brought Jean Blachowicz to the UFC.
Yeah, right? They don't give you an easy fight early. Part of it might be the same reason, like in pro wrestling. Like, you don't want to bring a guy in and immediately have him, like, go over on your champion, right?
Yeah.
He's got a job out, so the locker room trusts him. Maybe it's something like that where it's like, we don't want some Ryzen guy to come in and look amazing in his first fight, so everybody thinks Ryzen is hot shit. So let's give him a fucking hard fight so that people are like, oh, Ryzen, that's bullshit too. You
know I think there's a bit of that, because if you think about Jean Blachowicz, in 2014, he was hot shit. He was a top 10 light heavyweight. He was a world champion. Selling out arenas. And it took him like 6 years to get that kind of recognition in the UFC?
Yes, where it could have been half of that.
Yeah.
With the right matchmaking, it could have been half of that. Yeah, I think it's just, you know, he's clearly not a priority for them in that way. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you're really serving this up on a platter. They're not serving this up on a platter. It's not just a tough fight, which is what you should expect in the UFC. It is a tough stylistic matchup. Imagine if they treated him like Greg Hardy. He'd be on posters and shit.
Yeah.
He'd be a big fucking deal. But they're not going to do that.
I remember when Jean Blachowicz came to the UFC. There wasn't a peep. There wasn't a promotion.
Nothing.
They didn't even mention anything. And I feel like they're doing that
same
with
guy.
You. Yeah.
Yeah. Same thing happening. Volkan, super, super tough, like I mentioned. I think he's on a 2-fight win streak. I haven't pulled up here. I can check.
But if he pulls that upset.
Yeah, he beat Rakic in his last one. Alexander Rakic, who's a super similar fucking, he's a really good Eastern European striker. Rakic has a beautiful, I think from the left hand, left high kick that he like alternates back between, kind of Krokop-like. So if Jiri does a lot of that, he's fucked. Let's see.
It's going to be an interesting fight. I'm looking forward to it. I think that's the first fight in the whole night that I'm dropping everything and I'm watching that fight.
Let me see what else we got. Amir Kwani versus Danny Henry is not a bad fight. Ooh. Salikov versus Elias Zaleski is not bad whatsoever. You liked that Leo Santos-Roman Bogatov fight.
I think that's a great fight. Roman has been looking fantastic up in Eastern Europe. He's one of those guys. He's undefeated. He's young. He's in a perfect opportunity to make his UFC debut. And Leo Santos was looking fantastic before he left due to injuries. Now on the wrong side of 30. He's actually 40 now. He's riding up a nice streak. His last couple fights, he KO'd Stevie Ray, TKO'd Kevin Lee. He beat Efrain Escudero. He had the majority draw against Norman Park. That lets you know how long he's been gone when you mentioned Norman Park.
Norman Park and Efrain Escudero.
Yeah.
What a fucking blast from the past. And then the next card is 4 days after that, so we might have to hop back on here and talk pretty quick.
I'm really excited about this card. I think this card's gonna be fantastic. I think this is if you can do a fight party during COVID, do it for this one.
Don't do a fight party during COVID. Don't do that. Don't be Brendan Schaub's about this, you fucking idiots. Did you see that party in Texas where every single person at the party ended up testing positive for COVID afterwards?
No.
Fucked up. That's crazy. Not ideal. Killed 3 people in the family. Anything else for the week, Jesse?
No. Follow me on social media, Jay Rebus Comedy, and Jay Rebus on Facebook.
Thank you. Subscribe to the show. Like the show. Do all the show stuff. We really appreciate it. And you can follow me on Twitter @BadTweetist. And we'll be back next week here on The Fighter's Block.